Today on Straight Talk Africa, the Central African Republic fell into chaos in March 2013. This, when northern mostly Muslim Seleka rebels seized power. Since then, sectarianism has reportedly defined the conflict in the CAR. Thousands have died and tens of thousands have been displaced. Others have fled their homes and sought refuge in neighboring countries. That's coming up next, right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to a special edition of Straight Talk Africa. It's Wednesday, November 12th. I am Shaka Salee.
And hello to all of you at home or at work on the continent and elsewhere. I'm glad to be with you today. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll introduce you to three religious leaders from the Central African Republic who are here to bear witness to the whole world on what is going on in their nation and their tireless quest for peace.
The key word here is peace in the Central African Republic. Well, coming up later in our STA inbox, we'll share some of your thoughts on the current situation. Hope you'll stay with us.
But first, the Ebola crisis and Boko Haram in West Africa, Syria and Iraq turmoil in the Middle East have caused some to ask, has the world forgotten about the conflict in the Central African Republic? My colleague Paul Sisko has more.
On the eve of a national holiday in the United States, Veterans Day, pictures of violence-torn Central African Republic are exhibited at the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. Attending the event and in the U.S. Capitol, seeking international support to end the war, are three religious leaders from CAR. Archbishop Napolinga is the Catholic Archbishop of Bangui.
The state has ceased to exist. The state is limited mostly to Bangui. The rest of the country is lawless. The school system, the health systems, and other functions that are normally taken over by the state has not been able to prevent the misery and poverty all around Bangui. This misery is affecting mostly the young people. It is the youth. It's 50% young people in my country. They are no longer going to school. They have nothing to do. They are easy targets for militia groups, for rebellion. Many have gone off to join other militia groups. So in Bangui, they dream of something else. That dream is, for many of them, death.
Amin Kobini is the president of the Central African Islamic Community.
We, through this interfaith platform, want to bring a focus back on justice and the importance of justice being sought to help us reach reconciliation. Justice can be a tool for reconciliation and for the development of our country.
Reverend Gaya Koyami is president of the Evangelical Alliance of the Central African Republic.
We represent the people, yes, the people of the Central African Republic. This is a wounded people. This is a tired people. This is an abused people. And they are also disillusioned. We are the spokespeople for people who have no voice, for people who are speechless, for population that does not have weapons but only has words in order to express their anguish.
They speak for those in the CAR who simply want to live in peace but have been unable to for years. Nearly a million Central Africans have been displaced, fleeing and caught in the middle of attacks and revenge attacks from mostly Muslim Seleka fighters and largely Christian anti-Boleka armed militants. Thousands of civilians have been killed. According to these religious leaders, what some call a religious struggle is more accurately described as a power grab by armed military groups in the face of a weak, non-functioning government. Transitional President Catherine Samba Panza has little or no institutional support and is without the needed funds to provide stability or proper security. French, UN, and AU peacekeeping forces are insufficient. However, the religious leaders are united in their reconciliation and peace-building efforts. They're calling on the international community to significantly and rapidly increase its efforts to bring an end to what some are calling Africa's forgotten crisis. Paul Sisko, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Now joining us here in our Washington studios are three distinguished guests, Monsignor Diodene Nzaparainga, the Archbishop of Bangui, Imam Omar Kobine Layama, President of the Central African Islamic Community, and last but not least, Nicholas Gelokoyame Bangu, the President of the Evangelical Alliance of the Central African Republic. Well, gentlemen, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
Merci.
Thank you.
You're most welcome.
Merci. Thank you.
On a programming note, our three guests are French speakers, and so we will have English translation. Therefore, today, we apologize that we will not be taking your telephone calls. Well, it is interesting that we finally met here in the studios at the Voice of America. And my first question, of course, goes to you, Archbishop Nzaparainga. What specifically brought you here? What did you come to do here, really?
Eh bien, nous sommes venus à Washington.
Well, we came here to Washington to speak for the voiceless, people from Central Africa who are desperate and want peace and reconciliation.
And what has been the reaction so far from the people that you have been able to meet?
We are in Washington for the second time. The first time, it was just to get in touch for awareness. Now, we think that a lot of people understood that it was very dire, that people need to act. And we trust that the United States are going to act with all of those who are already our partners.
Well, Imam Omar, what about your experience so far? Do you agree with your colleague? Is that the sort of reception that you have received? I
just want to add to what he said, because we're here to add to each other, to complete each other. So about our visit here, it is just as he said it, but I can add that we have been very well welcomed, just like the first time in March 2013, people welcomed us very warmly, and the follow-up is very positive. But now the situation in the field is more complex, and so we've come here to explain the pressing needs, the wishes of the people of the CAR, so that the services in the field would improve.
Reverend Gelokoyame, what about you? What is it that you have noticed this time around that you didn't experience the last time you were here in March? Has there been any significant difference so far in these two different visits to Washington?
We have noticed with a lot of satisfaction that the American authorities, both on the religious side and on the political side, were very attentive to what we had to say. And we've also noted that between March and our second trip here, a lot of things happened. The U.S. embassy in Bangui has been reopened. USAID has resumed its activities in the CAR. And we think that the more we can explain the situation of the Central African Republic to the U.S. authorities, the more we see that they are aware, that they have understood our explanations, and we are happy about it.
What about reports that despite the fact that you do have different groups of peacekeepers, you have those under the African Union,
You have those under the French army. What about reports that there is no proper coordination and that therefore, in fact, that has been able to cause problems? Is that something that you'd like to talk about?
Yes,
absolutely. Everybody has his own command in a very complex crisis. This is a problem. This is why we are always pleading, we are encouraging all the forces present in a country to organize themselves under the United Nations flag, because it's the United Nations that is covering the entire world. And so if the UN are present in the Central African Republic, I don't see why we can still talk about the EU forces on the one hand, the French forces on the other hand. I think we should unify the command, the military command, to be a lot more efficient in the field.
I see. Well, Archbishop, obviously, you have been able to meet, for example, the Secretary General of the UN in the process of your search for peace. Have you been able, for example, to put that question to him to see if, in fact, he can perhaps raise it with the UN Security Council that the peacekeepers in Bangui should have a joint command?
We always ask this question to whoever is in charge, and I think in the field there is a representative of the Secretary General. We met him. Here we saw that our wishes were not answered. So it is high times to push higher and to ask the decision makers, the Secretary General, the U.S. government, which is paying 28% of the UN budget. So it should be up to the sacrifices made by American citizens so that Africa is in peace again.
What about reports that, and I'm talking to you, Imam Umar, what about reports that there are actually some situations where one of the peacekeeping forces is, for example, perceived to be in support of one of the major militias, because you do have the Sereka militia, which reflects the elements of Muslims, and then you have the anti-Baraka, which reflects the Christian, you know, elements. Is there any evidence on the ground, in as far as you are concerned, that some of these peacekeeping groups are indeed perceived or support one group vis-à-vis the other?
This is the image that some people have, and not everybody agrees. What does that mean? The groups have different commanders, so they share different commands. So one group, for instance, MINUSCA is in a given area. Sangaris is another area, and also in the capital. And Le Fort, the European army, is in yet another zone. So everybody thinks that these people are there. It's only to protect this particular religious community. It's a false perception. That's why we are asking that there should be only one single command to cover all these forces so that the average citizen doesn't think that this particular force is there to protect Muslims and that one is there to protect only Christians. These forces should be protecting the entire population of the country.
I see. Well, before we pause for a short break, would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is on the social networking website Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away.
Sia Nyama Karoma, the First Lady of Sierra Leone, speaks to VOA on the Ebola crisis.
I would want the people in West Africa to know that Ebola is real. Ebola kills. Early detection and prompt treatment can save lives. And I'm asking our people not to victimize or stigmatize survivors. Ebola is a challenge, but together we'll all be able to overcome it.
That was Sia Nyamah-Karoma, the First Lady of Sierra Leone, speaking to VOA Africa on the Ebola crisis.
How do you see the world?
I see countries in turmoil.
I see our planet changing.
I see people at peace.
No matter how you see the world, you'll get an unbiased and uncensored view of it on Voice of America, on television, radio, online and mobile. In more than 40 languages all day, every day, millions of people tune us in.
How do I see the world? On Voice of America.
Thank you very much. Imam, still with you. We've talked about these different groups of peacekeepers from outside of your country. What about your country? Is there any semblance of an army or a nucleus of some sort of a national army? What happened to the former national army?
This is the other point that we mentioned in all our visits here with different authorities, NGOs, with the American public. The problem of our security, we don't really have an army right now. Our government does not have an army. And the problem is the same. Every time there is a problem, there is a killing sprees, looting. When we meet the authorities of the UN forces, we asked them, we said, what is going on? How come you didn't protect goods and persons? It is the responsibility of your government, they tell us. And our government can't do it. We don't have an army. We don't even have a police. We don't have gendarmes. And the few people that are there to ensure security have no weapons. All they have is sticks. I mean, in the 21st century, I mean, you can't do that. You can't ensure security just with sticks. We don't understand. We don't understand how the UN resolutions are being applied on the ground, especially since there is an embargo on the Central African Republic. This embargo seems to be turned against the government. Then we can't buy any weapons, so why ask us to ensure the security of the population? If we are embargoed, then it is up to the international community to ensure 100% of people's security.
Interesting. Now, Reverend, I gather that you really do not have a government that is in effective control of the entire country. Is it true that when we talk about a government, we talk about, for example, incumbent President Catherine Samba Panza? We are really talking about being in control, perhaps, of some parts of Bangui, the capital.
When you're talking about the efficiency of a government, well, I don't know if the fact that it is not efficient is because of the president, Madame Samba Panza, or if it is wider. We should say that the international community, which is responsible to support the government and the people of the Central African Republic, should play its part, should play its share of the responsibility. The international community has to accompany the CAR government. That's when Madame Samba Panza and her government will be efficient. Give us the means. Give us the means to face our needs, pay the wages, ensure the people's security. And as my colleague was saying, you're talking about an embargo. The embargo is about weapons. I don't think the embargo should paralyze the government. The embargo is to prevent weapons to enter the country, and that is under the responsibility of the international community. They should rebuild the Central African Republic military so that the security of the country would be the job of the Central African Republic military, its police, and the UN troops, which is the tool of the international community. So we have to have all these efforts at the same time if we want to be much more efficient on all sides.
How can you say, for example, that there is a government in place when reports, in fact, suggest that it has not been able to succeed at securing a taxation base?
But lorsque on sait que tout le pays,
when you know that the entire country, all the provinces, are occupied by different armed groups, how can you ask the central government to collect taxes where it is not present, it is not represented? There is no government representative outside of the capital. For instance, if you take Bangui, the capital city, it is not entirely controlled by the government either, because some neighborhoods in Bangui are occupied today by mercenaries who do not want to see security being reestablished anywhere. And so I'm coming back to the same thing, to the responsibility of the international community. They should cover the entire country so that the government could redeploy its civil servant, who then could collect taxes and provide services so that the country can be afloat again.
From what I have heard in talking to your colleagues, Archbishop, it would seem to me that perhaps your country needs more than peacekeepers, that in fact your country might need nation builders. Is that an idea that you'd buy into?
En effet, les artisans de paix.
This is true. People who want to make peace are efficient when they can disarm heart and soul. You can grab a weapon from somebody. If he's still not convinced that there should be peace, he will go back. He's going to bring 10, 15, 20 more weapons. So peacemakers have a mission. They have to go deep in people's hearts in order to have fraternity, in order to invite people to development, to invite people to a restart. That's where we think that we, religious leaders, we have a role. Our partners also have a role to play on behalf of humanity, of mankind, so that together we can cast out evil spirits and ask each member of the CAR to be secure humanly, secure socially, and also take part in the development of the country.
Is it possible to bring about peace without, in fact, having first and foremost what people might characterize as the political will, in as far as the people in your country are concerned?
Before reaching that peace, there are prerequisites. Normally speaking, our country has gone through so much that it is high time for the village to gather again. People must speak to each other. What happened? How did it happen? Who is responsible? Who did what? And while talking, there will be a therapy. And listening to each other will be relieved. And at the same time, when we are talking, we want for justice to be rendered. Because very often you think that the victims are always victims and will always be victims. We think that another prerequisite is justice. The people who killed should not become ministers, president. It should not be able to divide the country. The international justice, national justice should pursue them. We should know that there is a rule of law in this world and in the other world. But at the same time, what happened, happened. And we can't just keep being obsessed on by that. We have to go ahead. We have to open a page of love, a page of fraternity, a page of reconciliation in order to rebuild a new CAR with the new generation. This is how you get to peace. This is where politicians have their place, because we are not going to take their place. We are not going to do their jobs. We are religious people, and it's up to the politicians to do their job. They must be able to lead a real policy, not for their own party, but one that will help the entire population to be back on the path of happiness.
Imam, your group has almost become a group, really, of celebrities. You recently visited, for example, the Vatican. You met with the Pope. What was it like for an imam to meet the Pope, Pope Francis?
I think that peace is a common aim for all religions. And the Pope is the peace ambassador. He's somebody who is always against the violation of human rights. So we are linked together by this peace, the word of peace. When we say hello to each other, it's the word peace. We always say, peace be with you. The Muslims always say, peace be with you. So this is how we are linked through the word peace. And if we had, when we visited the Pope, it's so that he would support us in our pleading for peace on behalf of the Central African people. And he did it. He supported us. He always took into account the sufferings of our people in his prayers, in interfaith prayers. It is an important gesture for peace made by the Pope.
It is interesting that a major French daily newspaper, Le Monde, dubbed you as the three saints of Bangui. Have we heard about that?
This is what people say. We never wanted to be saints or to take their place. We are here to plead the cause of the people of the CAR. And if people think that this is the job that saints used to do, I mean, men of God, and that they recognize us as such, well, we can always only say thank you and ask all of them to make sure that we really become saints. Thanks to their prayers, and we should be the saints of peace.
Now that you are perceived to be saints of peace, is there anything tangible, anything that you can touch on and say, you know what, Shaka, this is what we have since accomplished?
What we have accomplished, number one, is that we have given the chance to the Central Africans not to be totally swept by the political storm that imposed a war on us, a religious war. This is the main act that we achieved, so that today believers are protected. You saw that the Christians were welcoming Muslims in their churches. This is the act that we accomplished. And we've also organized workshops for social cohesion with Selikas and anti-Balakas, who afterwards committed themselves to social cohesion. But, you know, we are only humans, and there's always constraints. Our constraint is at the security level. We only have the word. We don't have a force. And we have come here to ask for the support of a great nation which fights against intolerance and injustice in the world, like the U.S., with other nations in the world, in order to help us disarm our extremists, the ones who take as hostages our communities.
Very interesting. You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Jaro. Mariama, take it away, please.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from all of you guys who listen to us on the radio or watch us on TV or via web. But now, here is our letter of the week from a viewer in Abuja, Nigeria.
Omunua Okugbo from Abuja in Nigeria writes, "Interfaith dialogue is a very effective peace-building tool in the Central African Republic's conflict because it gives all the sense that every individual, regardless of his or her religious affiliation, is worthy of love and respect. However, there must be realistic plans for economic development that gives hope to the masses. Peace cannot be sustained in an atmosphere of material poverty and hopelessness."
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, as violence ravages the Central African Republic, three gentlemen of different faith, whom you've been watching and listening to on our program today, have been working tirelessly for peace in order to hold their country together. They are religious leaders who say they are actually doing what their faith has called them to do. Their interfaith peace platform is spreading a message in villages throughout their nation as they advise political leaders on a vision of peace. Is it working? Well, this is the million-dollar question that brings us to our question of the week, asking, to what extent do you think that an interfaith perspective is an effective peace-building tool in the Central African Republic's conflict? Well, thanks everyone for using all our social media platforms to tell us what you think. Let's begin with a comment from Frank Mulenga in Lusaka, Zambia, who writes, "Both Christians and Muslims have a role to play to keep peace in the CAR, for there are many African countries where Christians and Muslims live in peace." Another comment comes from Bob Akampurira in Kampala, Uganda, who says, "Religious leaders and their followers make choices as to the meaning of the sacred and the content of their faith. These choices, in turn, determine their attitudes toward conflict and violence, which in turn will bring peace in the region. So I think if we are to have peace in the Central African Republic, religious leaders should join the cause through preaching reconciliation and harmony." Well, which is exactly what these three gentlemen are trying to do, Shaka and Guest.
What about you, Reverend? How do you react to that?
Reconciliation, forgiveness, this is what we are preaching, because we think that it is true. Something divided us, but we lived it in our blood, in our flesh, but beyond that, we have to understand that as long as there is life, we are condemned to live together, just like teeth and the tongue are condemned to live together in the mouth. And as religious leaders, we are saying that we have a message of hope to preach. We preach faith, we preach hope, and we are saying that whatever you can believe of this crisis in the CAR, whatever you believe, peace will come back. Calm will come back. Reconciliation between the citizen will come back. As long as we, religious authorities, will remain faithful to the ideal that God gave us, that is to say, to live together.
Very interesting. Mariama, what are people saying on social media?
Well, we'll move on to a post from Akira Kitara, from Dar es Salaam in Tanzania, who says that an interfaith perspective is an effective peace-building mechanism among the communities in the CAR because it could allow religious tolerance that brings about shared meanings of faith and coexistence of the communities. And finally, let's look at another one from Michael Ameza from Benin City in Edo, Nigeria, this time, who writes, from the looks of things in Africa, it seems that religion has not helped matters. If you view it from the comment of some religious leaders, it has not been comfortable. So interfaith will not help matters, but economic development could let our political leaders do the right thing by engaging the youth. An idle mind is the devil's workshop. If the youth, who are important stakeholders in nation building, are engaged constructively, there could be peace in Africa. Well, Shaka and guests, I believe the viewer is not really dismissing your work in helping find peace in the Central African Republic, but he's tossing out some ideas on other ways to address the current problem. So what do you make of it?
Archbishop, it is all yours. How do you react?
I would like to thank all of those who reacted to what we have been saying or to what we are living through in the CAR. I'm also saying to young people who are listening to us that youth in the Central African Republic is a key. It is a key for change. And we invested ourselves in order to meet these young people, to listen to them, to ask them not to look for solutions through violence. And we're also taking into account the question of poverty. We have come here to ask the U.S. government to support the transition. As I said, and I repeat it, we are not the politicians. We are not wanting to do their job. But we would like to make so that our youth can go to school, can get a job, can get out of idleness, bring its contribution to this village, which is now the world. We can't be indifferent. So I think that what young people are saying, this is welcome, because the more we are together, the more it is going to be solved. There's a question of solidarity and dialogue. We live that every day, and I encourage other religious leaders to get together and to discover the same thing we did.
Talk to us very, very briefly about what you characterize as, quote, peace schools, unquote.
Peace schools. These are places where we have young people who meet with us, and we tell them that given the actual context, our history, it is out of question to preach hatred. It is out of the question to preach division. On the contrary, we have to change. We have to convert our tongue in order to transmit a message that is going to bring young people together, a message that is going to allow them to forge a future. And we saw that in our country, when they get together, when they have ownership of these projects, they are happier. And they have become peace ambassadors. They spread out in Protestant communities, in Muslim communities, in Catholic communities to preach peace. And we are very happy that our intuition didn't stay among us. It was spread around the young people because it is their future, and the future is to mix all together and not to stay with our communities.
Very interesting. Again, thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, that does it for today's social media segment. Thanks to our guests for responding to our audience. And I forgot to say in the language bonjour and bienvenue earlier, so this time I'm going to take advantage and say thank you in French as well to our gentlemen. Merci beaucoup, messieurs. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please, please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords, Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. Or you can join our YouTube channel. Simply subscribe to VOA TV to Africa. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
What exactly is Ebola?
Can I catch Ebola through the air?
Are the people who have it contagious?
What is our government doing about Ebola?
What are the symptoms of Ebola?
You have questions about Ebola? Straight Talk Africa has answers. VOA presents Straight Talk Africa, Ebola, Knowledge is Life. A special town hall meeting with leading experts on the front lines who will answer many of the questions surrounding the Ebola outbreak. VOA presents Straight Talk Africa, Ebola, Knowledge is Life. November 19th, only on VOA.
Welcome back. Today we are hosting three religious leaders from the Central African Republic who are here to bear witness to the whole world on what is going on in their nation and their tireless quest for peace. Our distinguished guests are Monsignor Diodone Nzapalainga, the Archbishop of Bangui, Imam Omar Kobine Layama, President of the Central African Islamic Community, and last but not least, Nicholas Gelekoyame Bangu, the President of the Evangelical Alliance of the Central African Republic. On a programming note, our three guests are French speakers, and thus we have English translation. Therefore, today we apologize that we are not able to take your telephone calls. I hope you'll find some space in your beautiful hearts to forgive us for that. Well, let me come to you, Imam, again. You and your fellow panelists have said that the war in your country is not sectarian. It has nothing to do with religion. It's just about hungry, greedy, selfish people who are fighting for power. Is that true?
Exact.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You showed us earlier something about the anti-Balaka, about the Seleka, their aim, the Selekas, for instance. It was not to defend the Quran. It was not to turn churches into mosques. Their objective was different. It was to seize power, because they thought that whoever is in power had probably badly managed the country before, didn't help their region, didn't have a good ethnic policy, didn't have a republican policy, and there's many reasons. And they had amulets on them. These amulets are not allowed by the Quran. You can't wear amulets. This is forbidden by Islam. You also saw the anti-balaka was the same voodoo signs with amulets, with gris-gris, as we call it. These people have adopted another culture, thinking that this culture could give them victory. They are convinced of their right. They didn't think that God existed, because if you think that God exists, you're not going to loot, to rape, to kill, to assassinate, break human rights. If you are a believer, you don't behave like this. And the Seleka didn't have an imam at their head either. They didn't have any Muslim religious authorities leading them. They didn't ask the Muslims to go kill the Christians. And look at the Christians. The archbishop is here. The pastor is here. They did not ask the anti-balaka to go kill Muslims. This is not religious at all. This is really a diabolical political plan to seize power. And they use the religious fiber of people to get there.
How do you respond to someone who says that, on the contrary, the problem of Africa, not particularly limited to your country, is because in Africa, in order for you to have access to power, you have to go through what they call cross-cultural groupings, which includes religious organizations, ethnic communities or tribes and clans. How do you respond to that?
That is why we think that Africa really suffered throughout its history of this practice. It is the traditional practice now for our politicians. We think that it is high time for religious authorities to play their role. Their role is to call for fraternity, tolerance, and love, because all these politicians, of course, are members of our religions. They are Muslims, they are Christians. We should play our role of pastors in order to make them aware, to bring them to an understanding that power belongs to God. God gives it to whoever he wants and can take it back. It is an illusion to try to seize power by force using religion, using your ethnic group, using a community. And you can't keep that power the same way. You have to manage the country well. And it is God who has the power. God will transform the heart of the people who have the power. He's going to accept you and he's going to love you.
Is it true, if I may ask you this question, that when the Sereka militia, the rebels led by Michel Djotodia, when they arrived in Bangui and seized power, they approached you for your support and you rejected to be associated with them?
D'abord, au contraire.
First of all, on the contrary, they told us one. I was with the archbishop. They said, it's your fault. It is why we lost power. So they could never be with me, because from the very beginning of their race to power, I said no to their activities. I denounced what they were doing. So before even seizing power, I was already considered as an enemy by them. I was considered as opposing their objective. They never asked me anything. And President Djotodia, because of my presence in the platform, has refused to see us for 5 whole months while he was in power. So you see, all this is very complex. They had a religious vision, but I had the voice of religion. My voice was listened to, both by the Muslims and by others. But I refused to be associated to their power. I refused to get along with their project.
A reminder that you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll continue our discussion in a moment with our three religious leaders from the Central African Republic. We're right back with you, so please don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidui. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa coming to you live from Washington. Let me come to you, Reverend. We did not really forget you. You heard, of course, Imam explaining why Africa suffers from the problem of cross spiritual groupings. How do we move to, for example, the level of the Western world where they say, in as far as they are concerned, they access power through cross-economic groupings, meaning you can have political parties, you can have trade unions, you can have labor movements, you can have professional bodies that you can work your way through to reach to the top without appealing to blood ties.
Vous savez, une nation,
you know, a nation depends on the quality of its citizens, the quality of the persons that it trained. We all know that the problem of Africa today is illiteracy. And generally speaking, politicians are playing on that. They are playing on that fiber in order to sit their authority for a long time. To answer your question, it is true. Methods are changing through the ages. Before, all you needed was to use trade unionists to organize strikes that would topple a regime and that would bring about the seizing of power of another leader. At one point, we used poverty in Africa in order to receive money, in order to be able to corrupt the weak and push them to elect wealthy people, somebody who behaved as a pasha, as we say in Africa, a wealthy man who would stay in power forever. I think we have to go beyond these realities. Now, what we hear is that African leaders should follow what the West has done. They should try to develop the human side of the citizens, tell the citizens that it's up to them to be responsible for themselves. And if you take responsibility for yourself, then you can be yourself. This is what we religious leaders, we are preaching, so that you do not keep on depending from others. Beg with your hand extended. Pretend that you're sick. Pretend that you always need to have support and welfare. When we travel around the world to ask for people to understand us, we ask the international community to understand who we are. It is not to maintain our people forever as assisted people. We want to support our country. And when somebody is in a coma, for instance, they need the doctors, they need specialists so that they can come back to life. But what we are saying is that in the long run, one day, Africa must be mature. And to show itself as being mature, it is then, only then, that Africa is going to deserve other nations' respect. So you see, the situation is very complex. You cannot apply directly what's going on in the English-speaking African area to West Africa, to the French-speaking part of Africa, to Burundi or to Rwanda. Each nation must develop itself, must mature, so that they can give hope to their citizens.
Yeah, it makes point, especially when you talk about the majority of people in Africa being illiterate. But what about the fact that the largest democracy in the world, India, also happens to have the largest percentage of people who are illiterate? What does that tell us? Isn't it possible, perhaps, that in fact the problem may lie squarely with those of us who are educated or who claim to be educated in Africa, rather than the ordinary person that we claim is illiterate, the Reverend?
Vous savez,
you know,
il est de commun de pouvoir toujours dire
people always say
que,
that Africa has been colonized by the West. You hear a lot that this is why.
Mais
we are in a state wherein, but let's all agree that we Africans, among ourselves, we behave like colonizers sometimes. People who are intellectuals, people who are educated, who have learned more than others, they are so-called the enlightened. Sometimes it's these people who are exploiting the illiterate. They are using them as if they were subjects, as if they were people who have no right to respect, for instance. And we think that Africa has a history. You cannot say that our ancestors were intellectuals. Back then, you could have an Africa that was brilliant. You could have an Africa that was self-sufficient for food. You had chefs, you had chiefs all around Africa in organized societies. But today, we are trying to collaborate. You see what happens. This is making things much more complicated in Africa, where you have a dominated people and you have people who dominate. And so illiteracy, yes, it is a danger for the development of a given society. But we are saying that most of the problem of Africa is not linked only to illiteracy. It's there. But let's recognize that there are some Africans who are using this illiteracy in order to, as I said, lord it over their compatriots. And the time has come for us to understand that the development of Africa depends on everybody. The illiterate, the erudite, all together, we have a role to play. We have our role. Because don't tell me that somebody who is a so-called intellectual with a given rank will accept to come back to Africa to polish shoes. I mean, we need people at all levels. You need people at a low level and at a high level. But all this should converge, should tend towards a cohesive society. This is what we are looking for. We, the servants of God, we religious leaders, so that everybody can find his daily bread, his place, as we ask God very often. So I'm saying that these factors can be factors of unification as well as they are factors of development. You're not going to find a society where everybody's an intellectual. Even in a state like the United States or France, you will find people who are illiterate, people who have no access to knowledge, and yet they are there, they have a life, and they contribute to the development of their country.
Very interesting. Archbishop, there is a saying that information, in fact, is the oxygen of democracy, of freedom. Do you believe that?
Somebody who is not informed lives in the shadow. It's like the myth of the cavern where people are in the dark. They wish they would be informed. But there is information and information. It is the good, the right information that opens your eyes, that allows for cohesion, that creates links, that creates energies and synergies. These are the good bits of information. That's what we are aspiring for. This is what should be in our life and wake up our conscience. This is what we wish for.
Well, unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally. On that note, thanks to our three distinguished guests, Monsignor Diodon Nzapalainga, the Archbishop of Bangui, Imam Omar Kobine Layama, President of the Central African Islamic Community, and last but not least, Nicholas Gelekoyame Bangu, the President of the Evangelical Alliance of the Central African Republic. Thanks to affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. You have questions about Ebola? Straight Talk Africa has answers. Join us next Wednesday for a special town hall with leading experts on the front lines who will answer many of the questions surrounding the Ebola outbreak. Join us next Wednesday, November 19th at 18:30 UTC for a special edition of Straight Talk Africa, Ebola, Knowledge is Life, Town Hall. On that note, it was a pleasure, of course, having you on this program. Come again. Thank you so much. Let's go now.